On today's College Football Inquirer, the coaching carousel, it is a spinning. James Franklin takes the Virginia Tech job. Lane Kiffin has a deadline. Also, family members doing site visits in Gainesville and Baton Rouge. Plus, we'll try to preview the college football playoff rankings. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee has a new chair and a new member. Plus, more from Ross on the Big Ten Enterprises investment deal. Don't call it a private equity deal. You'll get yelled at. We'll talk about it all on the College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and we are talking coaching carousel because in what might be the busiest coaching carousel in college football history, one seat has been claimed. James Franklin, fired from Penn State, is now your new Virginia Tech Hokies head coach. Gentlemen, this is a good deal.
I thought we were going to talk about Kent State, Andy. Removing the interim tag.
They did remove the interim. That was like a couple weeks ago, though.
I know. I'm going to make a G5 joke on probably our busiest show of the year. Early analysis. I believe the correct take here is, I'm fine. Make a little noise like, fine. That is the correct analysis here. Anything else, you're going too far in one direction or the other, or you're a Penn State fan. This is fine. This makes sense. This is probably good for all parties. If we want to get into the weeds here, talk a little bit about James Franklin's familiarity with the recruiting areas here. If you are a Hokies fan, one would appreciate the fact that Franklin has a ton of familiarity with what we call the DMV, where Ross lives. Mm-hmm. Although in D.C., they just say they're from D.C. because they want to be elitist. You know, they're like, I'm in the district. I'm in the district, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not in
the district.
I'm not in Prince William County.
Foggy Bottom?
That's where I grew
Georgetown.
Up.
Georgetown.
Prince William County.
Like Foggy Bottom.
My observation yesterday, Andy, I know you talked a little bit about this on your On 3 show. I have not talked about it yet. You know where, like, I kind of want to jump a couple spaces. Yes, there are going to be moments where the future Penn State head coach and this coaching staff at Virginia Tech butt heads on the recruiting trail because there's a sort of overlap in the Mid-Atlantic. But based on years spent talking to James Franklin when he's at Vanderbilt and Penn State, based on spending some time with Brent Pry at Virginia Tech and just knowing the area pretty well, do you know what school it's going to be really interesting to see James Franklin go head-to-head with in recruiting and expanding the brand? That would be your University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Tar Heels. Because when Brent Pry took that job, the now former head coach at Virginia Tech, they talked a lot about how when Penn State was successful, they went all the way from Pennsylvania down into Charlotte, right? And Virginia Tech had sort of become an afterthought. And UNC and Penn State would almost kind of bump into each other as I blocked my camera for visual effect. And so I'm going to be really curious, guys. We know James Franklin is aggressive. We know he is abrasive by nature, sort of by design. I can't wait. I can't wait for a little friction between Virginia Tech and UNC in the recruiting trail. Those two personalities, those two lovable, those lovable scamps, Bill Belichick.
The question is whether Michael Lombardi will realize he needs to be recruiting the same players as James Franklin.
Or recruiting. Maybe, you know,
at all.
Or doing the college football thing. Let's see. It's an interesting strategy.
I think James Franklin might run into Jake Dickert at Wake Forest before he runs into Michael Lombardi and Bill Belichick.
We cannot talk enough about Wake. We're not going to today. Sorry, but we need to talk about it soon.
We don't have room to talk about Wake today, unfortunately. But yeah, he's done a great job there. I do wonder how often that he'll bump into Penn State people. And I wonder what Penn State staff members that he'll bring along, right, to Blacksburg. Probably several, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah.
That's already started.
And his former right-hand man had gone to Virginia Tech with Brent Pry. Michael Hazel.
So, shout out, Mike.
Yeah, so he's. I would assume he's staying in Blacksburg, and there will be some people coming with James Franklin from Penn State. The question for me is what players, not necessarily coming from Penn State, but what players of the Penn State ilk. So the type of players that James Franklin recruited at Penn State, which of them will be willing to sign with Virginia Tech? Assuming not all, because it's a different level. The players that were being recruited by an elite Big Ten program have a lot of options. But if he gets a few of them, That seriously upgrades Virginia Tech's talent, especially relative to the league it plays in, because the only programs in that league right now that have that level of talent are Miami and Clemson. Clemson's not doing much with it. Miami, still alive for the college football playoff. We'll talk about that later. But it's a lot different than the Big Ten, where Ohio State is a monolith, where Michigan is there, Oregon is there. You know, depending on what happens at Wisconsin, if they really do resource Luke Fickell correctly, if Michigan State makes a change, Iowa's still going to be like, there's none of that. You're dealing with Virginia and Wake Forest and Duke and North Carolina, who are good some years and crappy the next year. And who knows if there's any rhyme or reason to it.
If you can unlock NIL and actually do what has been promised in the interim between prize firing and Franklin's hiring, I wore the perfect shirt for today. Because everybody in Virginia Tech, you talk about the 757 and what it was like under Frank Beamer, okay? Going and actually unifying that state in recruiting and getting back into Newport News, getting back into Virginia, this would be monumental for Tech. This is what Pry was planning on doing. They just didn't have the support, the apparatus around him. That alone would change Virginia Tech football. And then we can talk about, Ross, the winnability of the ACC relative to maybe a Big Ten. The ACC has no stable, locked down leader right now. You like what Rhett Lashley's doing in the long term at SMU. He stayed. Mario, we've made this joke 1,000 times, right? Well-resourced, sort of an unstable program. It's easier to get to Charlotte than it is to Indianapolis, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I was a little surprised that because of the jobs that could come open potentially down the road, and some of the jobs that are currently open that I know talk to James, that he did this right now. But obviously, there was sort of a deadline, another deadline put on him. I think there were several deadlines because it sounds like him and Virginia Tech have been talking for at least 2-3 weeks pretty seriously, it sounds like. And so there was a thought that he might wait and he'd continue to wait for something sort of bigger or better. But for Tech, this is huge because not only do you get like this proven winner and big name and all that stuff, but I think we all have to remember all the stuff made about how Tech is improving in resources and all that for the roster and all that stuff. With this additional $50 million, this isn't like, you know, $50 million just like sent from the university to the athletic department, right? They have to raise this money. And what better to raise some of this money than having somebody like a big name who everybody knows and trusts potentially with the money. Now, there's another side of that. And my guy Dan Wolken wrote about it yesterday is, well, you know, he's been at a place that gave him sort of everything and he sort of couldn't get over the hump. But to Andy and Godfrey's point about, well, the humps there were much bigger than the humps in the ACC, I guess. You know, so there's a thought that you can get over the humps in the ACC and sort of restore the consistent winning at Tech.
I think there's a real classification of head coach when it comes to underdog and builder. And I think Franklin excels at both of those because whether you can hate him right now at Penn State, justifiably so. Because Ross, you're right. To your point, whether it was Virginia Tech or maybe a Florida State opening or any of the other jobs we've bandied about, James Franklin had to look somebody in the eye and say, I'm your man, despite leaving a job or sort of being forced to leave a job where they offered him absolutely every advantage that they physically could at the very top of college football. You are right about that. But I think about Dan Mullen sometimes. Like Dan Mullen, Ross, probably the greatest head coach in the modern era of Mississippi State football, maybe ever. And then he goes to Florida, and he's just not that kind of coach, if we want to keep it simple and move this along. I think James Franklin fits better in terms of the scrappy, kind of almost elite idea of Virginia Tech because they played in one BCS national championship probably a generation ago. You know, when I was still in college and it was still – like Virginia Tech was one of the coolest brands in the country for a long time because of Michael and Marcus Vick and the players, again, that were coming out. By the way, I didn't say earlier, I'm wearing a Clips shirt if you're listening on audio. So Virginia has this potential to rebrand. And James Franklin's really good at that stuff. A lot of coaches claim to be good at branding. He's really good at that stuff. Like, yeah, I don't know if you guys know this, but when he was at Vanderbilt, he would call into the local radio shows every morning. And I don't mean for a scheduled appearance. I mean, he would be like, oh, we got James in Nashville online too. And it would be James Franklin harassing whoever was hosting because they were not talking about Vanderbilt football. He's that kind of thinker. And so I think if he gets that, look, that man keeps the Maryland football ops guide for whatever year it was. I can't remember off the top of my head, where he was the head coach in waiting under Ralph Friedgen before that deal went sideways. He kept that every time I'd ever walk into his office, it was on his bookcase, like prominently. That dude can put a chip on his shoulder and swing. Like, this is, you kind of like where this is going from a hype standpoint for Virginia Tech, but none of this matters unless the money's in place. Because Brent Pry wasn't a bad coach. They were woefully supplied to compete in the modern age.
During this cycle, like, you know, Franklin obviously interviewed with more than Virginia Tech people, and just hearing some of the way that his interviews went, you know, I don't think he was, I think that he expressed how much of the chip is on his shoulder because of the way things happened at Penn State. I don't think he feels like he gets enough sort of credit for what he did there, and he gets more criticized for what he didn't do there. And you could tell the way things ended that he's pretty angry about it, and motivated, and which is good for the Hokies.
Maybe the best PR I've ever seen, or certainly in the last 5-10 years, was the positioning of CAA to put James Franklin on game day. It was a week after the dismissal, right? Now this has been done before. They didn't invent the wheel here.
It was 6 days later.
Yeah. Again, we're not reinventing the wheel. Lane Kiffin did this after he got tarmacked after the Arizona State loss at USC, which is, what, a decade ago now? So this is not, again, a reinvention of the wheel, but I thought Franklin did an exceptional job of reversing narrative in that moment and talking about how he was ready to basically put a positive spin on a situation that otherwise kind of damned him, indicted him for what he was unable to accomplish with all these resources at Penn State. And then the next thing that CAA did was they got him out in the market, right? Mm. He was aggressive. He wants to coach right away. The offset on this thing, Penn State should be celebrating today. That check just got a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Penn State made a deal. Right. It's a $9 million lump sum. That's it. He took $9 million bucks. And everybody's asking, why'd he walk away from $40 million? Well, he didn't walk away from $40 million.
Yeah.
There's an offset. So whatever he made in his new job was coming off the tab. And I pulled up the old calculator, the old mutual fund calculator. So if you take $9 million and you put it in a 7% yield mutual fund and don't touch it, don't add any money to it, in 6 years, you're going to have $13.5 million. So basically, the total of the buyout was $49 million. So if James Franklin thought he was going to make $36 million or more dollars over the next 6 years, he's going to make more money this way.
Yeah.
Than had he just taken the buyout as was.
And none of that's the priority.
Right.
For Virginia Tech, obviously, I think he's, you know, they're getting, at least from what I understand, the first few years of the contract, you know, they're getting a discount on his salary. And I think they'll be putting that discount, you know, back into the program.
They better.
Potentially in the roster, I think, is where they'll put the discount. So it helps them out in that regard. And James still comes out, maybe close to the same as what the full buyout is, if not a little more, you know, especially on incentives and all that, from what I understand.
So getting back to the getting over the hump part, Ross, the hump where James Franklin was is Ohio State. That hump is Mount Everest. The hump currently in the ACC, well, it's like a two-way tie between Virginia and Georgia Tech.
Those are those are recent humps.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not a monolith. Ohio State is a mountain several have attempted to scale. One Jim Harbaugh comes to mind too. So, you know, the rock against which James Franklin broke himself is popular and frequently utilized. Ohio State is hard to beat, period. Full stop. There are several programs in the Big Ten right now. We could see this again. We could be talking about this with Oregon and Dan Lanning a year from now if their playoff fortunes are the same. And I'm not defending Franklin. It was a total failure. It was a system failure this year, flat out. You were afforded every luxury. I want to be really clear about this. This was a Ohio State level NIL. I'm not going to break down the whole roster again. But remember, they went out and paid out for a receiving core room because they lost Tyler Warren, who was their best receiver, to the NFL. They went out and stole Jim Knowles, paid him top dollar. Okay? He failed 100%. But several other people, organizations, brands have failed against Ohio State. I don't see a rock in the ACC, period. Florida State is in disarray. By the way, we should probably pivot a little bit to talk about what the timing of this means. It maybe sort of signifies in Tallahassee to me, because had Florida State been open or even just sort of signaled maybe, hey, this is going to happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks, I don't know if Franklin locks it down with Virginia Tech right away. It's less about Florida State.
But it could also be that Florida State said, we may open, but we're not hiring you if we do.
That's totally possible as well. But
I think he waited as late as he did, Godfrey, right, the last couple of weeks, because I think the deadline for Virginia Tech, maybe we had all heard probably, right, that it was this past Sunday, but that was like the second or third deadline they had given him, I think. And so I think he'd waited probably because he thought Tallahassee was going to open. And now, as you mentioned, this is a signal that maybe it's not.
That's also good business on Franklin's part, because it pushes Virginia Tech, maybe not so much to sweeten the pot, but I would say to build some concrete assurances into where this infusion of money is going. All we heard was money was coming in. We have yet to see, Ross, unless you've reported on it, specific details to the allocation of said funds.
Yeah. That's football coaches. They have to raise a lot of it.
Yeah. They want to know exactly. It's not just where it's going, but when it's coming. So, you know, these are things that I think Virginia Tech had to really, really push and kind of lay out in close to concrete for Franklin, because he's not going to step into a job. He's not going to step into Brent Pry's job. That needs to be clear. He's not replacing Brent Pry. This is a Tech 2.0, or this is an NIL portal era Tech, because no one could have won in that situation. I've said this on the show 2 times. I'll say it one more time. You turn on the Vanderbilt game, the fourth quarter of the Vanderbilt game this year, that was boys and men. The lines were, I would put that up on a screen to explain the NIL and portal era. Because, again, if you are a certain age, Virginia Tech has a certain association, top of the ACC, you know, wins its league with some regularity or competes for its league, went to a BCS national championship, and then it's doormat Vanderbilt, right? And those lines were absolutely, it was hilarious how different they were. And it was because one school was utilizing the apparatus and one wasn't. So, overall, I think it's a good hire. I think it's smart for both parties. I think the ACC is going to be really fun to watch for the next 5 years. Because it doesn't have an Ohio State. I know they need one. I get it. But like, we can talk about Clemson. We probably will on another show coming up soon. There's instability there. Florida State is a quagmire. Miami, even when it's incredibly talented and effective, is always susceptible to self-immolation. This is a fun league to watch. Maybe Brent Key stays. Maybe Brent Key goes. What's Georgia Tech like after Haynes King? This is a wide open power league for the next couple of years. And that makes for good football.
Well, and also, there's the future of the league and the looming, basically the sword of Damocles hanging over the league.
Yeah, there is a
league. Of 2030, where the buyouts all drop if people want to get out. You've got Florida State, Clemson that sued. You've got North Carolina that would have options. Virginia Tech, when we made those little charts, where we envisioned the Super League with 48 teams or however many teams.
Did you Virginia have them on Tech, there?
Didn't usually make the cut.
Did you have him on your cut?
No, but it was close.
Right, exactly.
But what if they're coming off a couple ACC title game appearances? What if they're the talk of the town? What if James Franklin pops on College Game Day every week just to remind everybody the Hokies are there?
Exactly.
Yep. Yep, they know. I think they know this is the time, right? That they need to make themselves valuable. And to do that, you have to win at football. And this is like the play that probably North Carolina was thinking they were making with Belichick.
right. I'm sorry.
Hasn't gone like they wanted it to go.
Sure.
But it's all like this, like, we're going to hire this big name, legendary sort of coach, and we're going to turn our football program into this winning beast and be able to get to the Big Ten or SEC when some kind of crazy thing happens years from now. So
you're right about the North Carolina exposure part of this, because a writer, David Covucci, who's actually a Virginia Tech alum, he runs a Substack called FOIA Ball, where he just constantly is sifting through open records. He got a hold of the episode summaries for the now canceled Hulu show for North Carolina. That was exactly y'all. That was the play. Great. You can go and read the summaries. Yeah. Check it out. FOIA Ball. It's FOIA Ball on Substack. You can read through they had four episodes close to being in the can. I think the fourth one was. This was designed to be a marketing apparatus for UNC football. And then I think back to they lost, obviously, to Dickert and Wake Forest, but the game they won most recently was either, I think it was Stanford.
Stanford, yeah.
There's a locker room clip where, you know, they're trying to do, and it's so crazy. I'm sorry, y'all. It's so crazy to compare this to, like, Dan Lanning or just, like, a modern college football head coach who knows what the hell they're doing, like Kenny Dillingham or Dan Lanning. There's a clip of Belichick in the locker room after they win a game. Now, think about how many games they've won this year and how hard it is to come by wins. The flatness, the monotone, the dismissiveness, the resign, the boredom in his face as he's giving a victory speech in the locker room at North Carolina around a bunch of 19-year-old kids. And you think, this was your decision? This was how you're going to win in college football in 2025? It blew me away. It showed up on my feed this weekend, and I could not stop laughing.
And that's what James Franklin's up against. I like James Franklin's chances.
I love, that's what I'm saying, is I love this dynamic moving forward. I think Virginia Tech, North Carolina is going to be a thing. I just, because it's
I'm
yin and yang.
James from Blacksburg to come back, because when I started at SiriusXM, I was told, watch out, you may get James from State College calling in.
Definitely.
He had just taken the Penn State job, and he would call into shows as James from State College, and you get no warning, and then he'd be. So
I think this is going to be really good for him. Like, I've known him for a long time, just covering him, because he came up at Vandy when I was starting off at SB Nation. And so I just spent I think this is going to be really good for him. I think he's failed without question. He has failed. But I think this kind of dynamic just serves his personality so much better than the kind of just high stress politician's job that State College is. By the way, we can talk later about
it. I don't think he's lost his touch. I think, I worry more about Brian Kelly not being able to take another job at a lower level and win and come back. Like, I'm not worried about James Franklin being able to win games.
I would, I don't think Whit Babcock had a ton of choice. I don't think there was a lot of advantage on that side of the table, but I am curious what that, I want to know what that Q&A session was like. Like, tell me what went wrong this year and why. Where are you responsible? Like, all these football coaches love Jocko, right? Jocko's this inspirational speaker, is a former Navy SEAL. In the interest of extreme responsibility, boys, like, tell me where you went wrong. I'm really curious how Franklin talks about this moving forward, because Franklin loves a microphone and he's going to have to talk about it moving forward. So, but yes, to your point, Andy, BK is going to be much more of a refurbishment job if he can even do it this cycle. I know there's some talk about him in, like, a Michigan State. I don't know if I'm going in that direction if I'm J-Bat.
Like, if you are trying to hire these two guys and you brought them in, who do you think is more likely to be like, I am going to show these MFers who fired me?
I've never met someone with a bigger chip on his shoulder. And I say this with a little bit of admiration, because I certainly in my career, I've had to operate that way. Like, James Franklin, there is more fight in the dog than there is dog in the fight all the time. He grates on
me. That's the thing. He's hard on people for blood. And yeah, I think that makes this very interesting, but it is maybe not the most interesting piece of coaching carousel news that came out on Monday.
No, it's definitely not.
When we come back, the saga of Lane Kiffin, people in Gainesville, people in Baton Rouge, a deadline in Oxford. Yes, it's coming. And before we get to that, if you want to see Ross's beanie, which is perched very jovially.
It's not a Penn State beanie.
Can we call it a
tuck? It's not a Penn State beanie.
We have some Canadian listeners. We have some Canadian listeners on social.
That sounds like a slur, so I'm not going to say it.
No,
it's a tuck. Yeah, what is that? What?
It's what Canadians call your beanie. They don't use beanie, Ross. They say it's a tuck.
Didn't they call it a tuck on Strange Brew?
I'm like, gonna look.
Thinking, yeah,
yeah. Shout out
on?
To Strange Brew reference this morning. Let's go.
So, sorry, this afternoon. If you want to, turn on your smart TV. Look at the home screen. Find the icon for the Yahoo Sports Network. Click that. You can watch the College Football Inquirer and all the other Yahoo Sports Network shows. And if you want to see us anytime, day or night, regardless of device. YahooSports.tv on your phone, on your tablet. We are always available to you. You can watch us and you can watch the little pom-pom on Ross's hat sway back and forth as he makes his points. It's a glorious thing. When we come back, we dive deep into the saga of Lane Kiffin. We got plane tracking. We got deadlines. We got it all. We're back, and of course, I know you were dying to hear about Ross's hat, a little more about that. Oh. It is a BravoCon hat.
Bravo.
That he got at BravoCon in Vegas.
That's Ross attended, Bravo, the Ross TV attended network. BravoCon. That's the lead. Yeah. Ross was at BravoCon.
Andy Cohen reality shows.
For about a half a day, but it was it was entertaining.
Real Housewives of whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, the best potential Bravo show in college football is the Kiffin family.
The Kiffins, that segue, folks.
Next year on Netflix, the Kiffins.
Andy Staples with the segue. Whew.
But it's right there for you. They really are the ultimate Real Housewives of college football family. And so, and Lane Kiffin doing the hot yoga is the ultimate Real Housewife of college football. So. Mm-hmm. I'd watch the show. I wish the cameras were rolling right now, though, because we got all kinds of stuff going on. So Ole Miss beat Florida last week, is off this week, plays Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl on Black Friday. News comes out of Baton Rouge on Monday. All Things Go 22, I believe, is the name of the message board poster at the Bengal Tiger, which is on 3's LSU site, who got pictures at the private airport of the plane depositing Kiffin family members in Baton Rouge for a site visit, for a tour of the town. It then is reported and verified that Kiffin family members were in Gainesville on Sunday. Florida and LSU obviously both trying to hire Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss trying to keep him. It then gets reported by Pete Nakos of On3 that there is a deadline for Lane Kiffin that is roughly the start of Egg Bowl week. So the start of Egg Bowl prep, not the Egg Bowl itself, not the game, which is Friday of next week, but the start of the prep. So your Sunday would be your Monday practice for a Friday game. Do with that information what you will. And the reason you have to do this, and this is something that, you know, we talked about on the show last week. This is a conversation we had on Thursday's episode. Mm-hmm. We said, at what point does Keith Carter need to know whether he has to do a coaching search? Keith Carter's Ole Miss's AD. At what point does he need that information to start doing an actual coaching search? And the answer, as we now know, is the start of Egg Bowl week.
Well,
yeah, you know, I don't know if I said it last week on the show, but when I was there in Oxford a week ago today, this was something that was broached with me by people there of we're going to have like basically our bye week is a very big week for clarity in some kind of decision. Like we're going to need that. And I think, I think by the end of this week, they would like it. They would like some kind of decision from Lane. Here's the thing. If they don't get a decision from Lane, what happens? What legally can you do contractually? Mm-hmm. Can you do with a 10-1 head coach? It's unprecedented, sort of what we're seeing.
We have brought up 1989 Michigan basketball, famous story because it produced a famous phrase. Bill Frieder is the basketball coach at Michigan. At the end of the regular season, he discusses the job with Arizona State. He accepts the Arizona State job, you know, at the end of the season. Bo Schembechler, legendary Michigan football coach who was the Michigan AD, finds out and fires Bill Frieder.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he says, a Michigan man will coach Michigan. He promotes Steve Fisher. Steve Fisher then leads the Wolverines to the national title.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different era. Contracts are different now. Ross, you just mentioned this, and I want to dive deeper into this. There's really not a for-cause reason you could fire Lane Kiffin over this, because he hasn't accepted another job.
Yeah. His family, though, right? And I wonder how his contract reads, but his family getting on a plane and visiting a rival school in the middle of a season, I wonder... Ole Miss has a lot of lawyers. I wonder what they can dig up when it comes to any violation of a contract. Not to say that's going to happen, but I'm just trying to think of any possibility that Ole Miss would have some kind of reason to put him on leave or...
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say.
Whatever.
Sensitive situations, whether it's football coaches, any other thing, the first thing you do is you put the affected employee on leave.
Yeah.
They get all their pay. They just don't come to work.
Right.
Now, if I'm Lane Kiffin and I get put on leave, I'm also having my lawyers come after you.
Well, also, you made the decision for him, too, at that point.
Right.
Like you, if he hasn't made the decision, well, you just made it for him. He's just going to leave, you would think.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how he would spin this, though, because he wouldn't be that it wouldn't be that transactional. So we talked a little bit in the last segment about James Franklin and his ability to sort of bend and manipulate media. Lane Kiffin is a Jedi or a Sith, whatever. My prevailing sort of like boilerplate on this has been Lane's going to make this about Lane until the absolute last moment. That last moment is coming. The context here, if you're not familiar, is that Lane drew this out to a slightly lesser degree when Auburn was courting him a few years ago. That year, Ole Miss had an Egg Bowl in Starkville and looked absolutely hapless in that process and lost the Egg Bowl. After Lane decided he was not going to be the next head coach at Auburn. Auburn then hired former Ole Miss head coach Hugh Freeze because time is a flat, stupid circle. But Ole Miss is trying to avoid this on a number of levels because now this Ole Miss team is having essentially its greatest season since integration and has to capitalize on this moment. They also have to, big finger quotes here, this is why you should tune into video on the Fast Network and YouTube. I'm getting the camera ready. Start a coaching search, okay? Ole Miss has already inquired with several people on the potential of replacing Lane Kiffin.
Due diligence has been done.
Correct.
This is the reason there's a deadline is because the people that they have inquired about have told them, I am also up for other jobs.
Yeah.
And I can't wait on you.
Are so if you were right around
if
this,
your guy or? Is, let's say Keith Carter's guy is John Sumrall at Tulane. Let's say that's
Hypothetically.
Mm-hmm. No possible other information on this.
Hypothetically. Yeah. Clip that.
Let's
SEO
say that's
that.
Who it is. Yeah. Let's say that's who it is. If you want to hire him, you have to be able to talk to him and offer him the job before he takes, hypothetically, the Auburn job.
Yeah. You might need an opening to hire a coach. Crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
So. This is not, here's the, there's a lot of ego involved in this. It's hard to create a villain here unless you really want to castigate. And then there's like Mississippi politicians on social right now talking about how you should be thankful. I retweeted one of those idiots down in Mississippi, the gif of J.D. Vance telling Zelensky, like, you know, you should be thankful. Like, there are people who have taken this in a deeply personal way against Kiffin. You also have to understand, if you are Lane Kiffin, this is the highest and cleanest your brand's ever been. And so you have to really do due diligence. And I want to transition the conversation a little bit for a second. Because this harkens back to, and Ross, you've talked about this on the show before, because you and I are alumni of a have-not in the SEC, and Andy's an alumni of a have. And when we say have and have
I'm
not,
I'm not sure about that. We'll see how this goes.
That's where I'm headed, boss.
Yeah.
There was a designation in the millennium in the 90s when the SEC sort of started to become this corporate enterprise that you had the top and you had the bottom. There was a Mendoza line, and you could argue all day long about, like, as Tennessee sort of fell into disrepair after Fulmer, were they on the were they above or below the Mendoza line? It was a big conversation here in Tennessee. Let me tell you something. In Mississippi, we didn't have to ask that question, okay?
No.
Period. We were crabs in a bucket. And what's so shocking to me, maybe we can talk about this next week, Ross, is how the Egg Bowl has become a sort of secondary or it's a very different landscape of what's going on. I'm not saying these programs don't still hate each other, but there are bigger fish to fry. There are bigger priorities out there. Lane Kiffin, if you've been paying attention at this former have-not, has made a couple key comments all year. I went down and spoke at my alma mater back in early October. They played Washington State the next day. I took some Washington State grads to the game. It was the first time I had been in it. I think 12 years I had been in the stadium. And it was flat and it was empty. And when Lane Kiffin came to his postgame press conference, the first jab he could get in was talking about our offense looked as bad as the student section. Okay. After Ole Miss, stay with me here. I mentioned this because it was flat and it was bad and it was not big time. And everyone said, well, and by the way, Ole Miss was ranked third in the country or fourth in the country that morning. I just want to point that out. Okay. Let's fast forward now to this past weekend. Ole Miss beats Florida in primetime. And a reporter puts it on a platter for Lane Kiffin to talk about where he's brought the Ole Miss brand. And what did he say, guys? He started talking about, did you see last week? And he was referring to
the Citadel.
The Citadel. And Lane made a very salient point. Okay. He said, when you come out of the tunnel in the way that Vaught-Hemingway Stadium is positioned, the first thing you see is the opposite end zone and then the student section. And when it's flat and when the kids aren't there and when the fans are still in the Grove and they're not wearing red or blue and they're up their own rear ends because they're the greatest tailgate in the world and the game is an afterthought and you're in Mississippi with a low population and less money than Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, etc., this starts to weigh on a head coach, okay? Am I at the best possible program for myself? Now, as an alumnus of this university, but a native of Georgia, I was in the stands. I was on the 16th row, thanks to a very gracious listener of Phantom Island, with my sons in Sanford Stadium last weekend. Have you guys, and this is a rhetorical question because I know the answer, have you seen what Sanford Stadium looks like before a game right now? Do you have any idea?
It's a spectacle that has to be seen to be believed.
Gentlemen, it is Excelsior. Because growing up, Athens always got knocked as being a little too quiet, a little too boring, a little too golf crowd. And what Kirby has done and what Georgia has done to follow Kirby's lead, because he delivered the hardware, was they have turned Athens into the gates of hell for an opponent and an absolute spectacle for a ticket holder. My sons, who have been to a lot of sporting events by virtue of their dad's job, we were blown away. And this all goes back, and I'm close enough on Saturday night to watch a gaggle of recruits at Georgia just absolutely melt for that pregame.
And can I give you the personal experience of actually having run out of the Florida Tunnel on game day?
Go for it.
Before all this pyrotechnic stuff, this was just when the band was lined up and the guy goes, here come the Gators.
Yeah.
And you're running toward that north end zone. And it sounds like you're standing in front of a jet engine. And again, this is before, like now, where they have the fireworks going off and all the crazy stuff. If that's what you're talking about.
And we are, yeah.
It's a lot better at Florida and LSU.
Andy,
that's
when I was,
a lot better.
Mm-hmm. When I was a student journalist starting this gig in 2003, and I went to Ben Hill Griffin for the first time in the open air press box for a JP game, a morning game.
Yeah.
And it was packed.
JP.
And it was massive. And it felt like walking into a Roman Coliseum. I turned around to someone and I said, oh, this is how the other half lives. So all this factors into Lane Kiffin. We've talked about this in several different ways, financially, politically, state population, recruiting portal, whatever, guys. The bottom line is, does Lane Kiffin think that Ole Miss can hold company with Florida? Really Florida, because I think the LSU thing is a little bit of a smokescreen and a charade. And I've got a working theory I don't want to put on a microphone
now. He's got a lot of people in his ear telling him take LSU over Florida. So I would take it more seriously than that.
I'm curious how things shake out, because I also know that their camp is very mindful of what the management structure is or is not for the in the next couple of years.
Well,
so I'd be very curious.
That's a question at LSU and Florida, because the question at Florida right now is Florida going to hire an NFL style GM before they hire the coach? Mm-hmm. Which, if you're Lane Kiffin, that's not what you want. You would say, I would prefer not to. You would Bartleby the Scrivener that one.
Ooh, excellent reference. That's a good transition again. You're just John Stockton today, sir. Why are we even talking about Ole Miss in this capacity? We're talking about Ole Miss in this capacity, one, for the yeoman's work that Keith Carter has done as an alumni, keeping all the idiots at bay and raising young money, and to actually finally get that place, its head out of its own ass. But it's also Walker Jones in the NIL. Ole Miss has put on a clinic in NIL these last couple years because they've had some experience possibly with compensating players over the years.
Yeah.
This is why they hold company with these schools that we're talking about. This is why they have stuck their head up into the haves.
And the thing
neither school that he's looking at has that level of organization at present.
Correct. And may never.
Yeah.
Neither has historically been that aligned. I mean, LSU when Saban was there, but historically Florida has not been that aligned, or has been in the mode of, we don't need all that stuff. Like, that was the Jeremy Foley, Steve Spurrier connection was, we don't need the fancy indoor facility. We don't need that. We're Florida. Well, it doesn't work that way anymore. And
Andy, I remember when Florida sent reps to Oxford to look at the indoor practice facility that was built there, and none of us yokels could believe that Florida didn't have one already.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were the last one. Weren't they the last one in the league?
They were the last one in the SEC.
In the SEC, not to have an indoor facility.
They have one now. It's pretty.
Pretty
nice. If you are really looking long term, the advantage that Ole Miss has is fealty. Mm-hmm. You are a god, and they are going to provide above all other priorities for the betterment of your endeavor. And I don't know if I can say that long term, not because Florida and LSU don't care about football, but because I know what the palace intrigue looks like at those places and how hard it is to create an alignment. The millennials and some of the Gen X money that left Mississippi, a historically poor place, and went out and made money in oil, made money on Wall Street, made money in Silicon Valley. They're out there, believe it or not. The degree's better than what I did with it, allegedly. They have come in and said, you will get what you want. Tell us where to write the check, because they are so thirsty for relevance. And I don't know if Lane Kiffin works dynamically in either of the other places, because he's going to have to answer back to some people in the other places, Andy, which I think the last time he was even considered, and he really wasn't in Gainesville before they hired Napier, a lot of people blocked it just saying, like, he's not going to do the things that we demand in the offseason.
There was no consideration whatsoever for those reasons. So the other part of that is, they can win the national title now at Ole Miss. This is the part drives the my fellow Florida alums nuts when I say this. Who's closer to winning the national title right now, Florida or Ole Miss? Ole Miss.
Yeah, technically,
if the goal is
to
win the national title, Ole Miss will give you what you need to win the national title. So that's the part that in 2025 is different. In 2010, this was not even a debate. You were going to Florida or LSU.
Right.
You were not saying
just five years ago, right?
Andy, ever fire him if he does that. If he goes to the national title game, if he wins in Atlanta once, they will never fire him. Ross, you know
statue.
This.
Statue.
Yes,
name
they
on
are
the
going
street,
to build a statue.
All that stuff. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Mississippi.
And that's that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that. No, I'm just, that's what, like, you know, there's a tweet from Lane for 2022 where it's a picture of, one of the ESPN sideline analysts, like, messing around with his dog Juice on the field. And Lane said something about, you know, they're at Florida. I think they're at Florida on the field at Florida. I forgot who's the ESPN sideline analyst guys who's a Florida native. Who am I thinking of here?
Rutledge?
Yes.
Yeah, Laura Rutledge. Yeah.
Yes, when Rutledge is messing around with Juice on the field at the Swamp. And Lane took a picture of it, tweeted it. This is 2022, tweeted it and said, like, you know, stay away, Juice, from Laura Rutledge. She's a Gator. The grass isn't green. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. And now all these Ole Miss fans are, like, quote tweeting it, saying, like, Lane, reminder, the grass isn't always greener. And when I was sitting in his office literally a week ago, you could tell like the internal struggle of that with him of I know the grass isn't always greener, but I grew up wanting to coach at this place. That's what I thought, you know, Florida, LSU, whatever, those type of places, Auburn, Alabama. And now can I live with myself and turn it down? Can I actually live with myself and actually turn it down? And it's like this internal struggle that it feels like he's having. And at 9:30 a.m. on Tuesday, because when you listen to this, maybe the decision's already made, because I have a feeling it's going to be made quickly, because I don't know how long something like this can really drag out, given the fact that, you know, he's sort of been given a deadline by the school, the family's visiting other campuses, they're preparing for the Egg Bowl. Like, it doesn't feel like it can continue to drag out that much longer. At some point, he's just going to have to make some kind of decision. But he is, and somebody described to me Monday, he's about as unpredictable as sort of anybody in the industry, and somebody said, for the last 30 years, like of any coach in the industry for the last 30 years, and we don't know what he's going to do.
And here's the thing. It's also entirely possible that this has all happened and that he retcons this into creating, and I'm going to use a professional wrestling term here for you, Godfrey.
Let's go.
The biggest possible pop when he announces he's staying at
Ole Miss. Oh, look, that man would have been a hell of a booker. I'm going to tell you right now, if Lane Kiffin ever needed a second life, give him the book, as we say in pro wrestling, because he knows how to work an angle.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Speaking of working angles, we got everybody who wants to make the college football playoff working their angles, but we got a new chair on the playoff selection committee this week. We got a new member. What's going to happen there? Talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer. Big week with the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. Not necessarily because the rankings are going to change. They are going to change. Oklahoma beating Alabama is going to cause some shakeup in the rankings. But there is a shakeup in the lineup because Baylor Athletic Director Mac Rhodes, if you read Ross Dellinger's story last Tuesday, I believe it was, is taking a leave of absence from his job at Baylor and from the College Football Playoff Selection Committee. So, new member, Utah's Mark Harlan. New chair, Arkansas's Hunter Yurecek, who, by the way, is in the middle of a coaching search. What is this going to look like, guys, with the committee? And does it matter that Mac Rhodes is not there now?
I'll let Ross answer it. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to figure out like the dynamics and if they really will change on the committee. I mean, I think that first of all this was when this all sort of happened last week was like another sort of blow to the committee that's been at the center of a lot of criticism the last few years of and I think it calls into question sort of another whole topic, which is should sitting athletic directors who have all this going on their campuses, they've never been more busy than ever with their jobs on campus, should they be sort of taking time out and juggling this, which become this huge and very expensive sort of duty to pick playoff teams. So that's a whole other topic. But yeah, Hunter Yurecek gets the chair job. So he'll be on the screen on Tuesday night after the rankings. And then Mark Harlan joins. And people are sort of asking, like, why Mark Harlan is joining? Why did he get picked? He got picked because, well, first of all, there needs to be a Big 12 representative to replace. So it had to be a Big 12 athletic director. And he got picked because he was sort of like next in line because he wasn't able to fill his term the last time he was on, his full term, the last time he was on the committee. He only did 1 year because the next year, the Big 12 and the Pac-12 folded. He was the Pac-12's representative. And so he kind of like got the 1 year term instead of the normal 2 or 3 year term. So he was like the next in line. I don't know that it's going to change any kind of outcome from the committee, except we have a new face, right, on TV on Tuesday nights.
So what do we think happens? Where do we think Oklahoma lands and where does Alabama land?
I defer to you guys on this stuff. Because I'm just going to say it doesn't matter.
I think I'm going to piss off our producer TJ and say the two-loss Alabama will be ranked ahead of one-loss Oregon.
Oh, well.
Hmm.
Got to play somebody.
Because of the quality of wins versus the quality of wins.
Cut. You know what? We hit on this Sunday, and I forgot to circle back on it. Poor Oregon. They didn't know Penn State was going to suck. And they didn't know that Oklahoma State was going to have arguably its worst season in 30 years.
Yep.
Like, they just got the short end. I know Andy's response is going to be wait 5 years. We keep having this problem with Big Ten contenders.
Well, no, it's the Indiana thing from last year. When you looked at Indiana's schedule before the season last year, you're like, oh my God, they play the two teams that played for the national title the year before. This is a brutal schedule. And then when we looked at it at the end of the season, we're like, oh, they didn't really play anybody because Michigan and Washington were bad.
And then we come on here like a bunch of SEC alumni chumps being like, man, every week's like the NFL. But it is. Like, this is a Big Ten problem. Oregon should not get jumped, but they're gonna. I agree with the logic that they probably will, Andy, but they did everything they could within their power except beat Indiana.
Right. But the problem is, and this is the same thing we said about Indiana last year, is you lost to the best team you played. You're lost to the only really good team you played. And so now, here's the thing. Beating USC this weekend, I think, would help quite a bit on that. Because if you beat USC, USC beats UCLA, you've beaten a 9-3 USC team, that is a good win. And then, like, there's nothing to worry about for Oregon as long as they beat USC. They should be concerned if they lose. Because USC has a much better resume.
Then they have the head-to-head, right? Because they can both be 10-2.
Yeah,
and they may have the head to head.
No, if that happens, we're gonna have a very different conversation.
Oregon is in the playoff if they are 11-1. They're in.
Yeah.
They don't need to worry about that. It's more of an issue of, you know, if they lose to USC, what happens then? Because it doesn't like 10-2 does not necessarily guarantee them a spot.
I think
which
it's
is
more,
crazy. We always thought that, but everybody's just like losing a lot of games. So there's more 10-2s, I think, than we expected there to be. There's going to be this bulk of this group of 10-2s potentially, and somebody may get left out. Like Miami, right? Miami better be rooting for Oregon.
Vanderbilt.
Miami better Miami's be rooting for Maryland happen. This year or this week and Ohio State next week, because the only way that they're in rooting for, you know, BYU to lose, I mean, there's going to be like 4 or 5 or 6 10-2 teams, and one or two of them probably going to get left out. Like, it's the way it's looking.
I built this whole thing because, like, we were in Athens last weekend. We were talking to Georgia fans where it's like, get the 5. And this is before Bama lost. Like, get the 5.
Now they're like, get the 4.
I know. But none of them are, like, all of them kind of admitted. They're like, man, I don't want to go to Mercedes Benz 2 weeks in a row, playing the conference championship. All that might apply to Oregon, too, because if you stay out and you host a home game, I think Oregon fans probably feel a little, I don't know what the word is. They got vaporized as soon as they showed up in the playoff last year. Now, granted, the best team in the playoff was seeded in the first round, and we think we've fixed that problem, okay? But if you're Oregon, it does make a lot of sense to skip Indy, beautiful, sunny Indianapolis in December, and host a home game where you've got one of the toughest home environments in college football. That's a lot of teams right now. It's like, is Ole Miss in the playoff? Yes, they're in the playoff. Does Ole Miss need to win the Egg Bowl so they can host a playoff game? Yes. Like, you're fighting to host right now as a first rounder.
Yeah.
So let's think real fast about intimidating environments. The one that the two that I'm mindful of right now. You want a home game in Lubbock if you're Tech, for obvious reasons, and you want a home game in Eugene if you're Oregon. So there's still a lot left to play for in that regard. So I wonder if Oregon's mentality is less about getting in and just I wouldn't worry about what's above you right now. I wouldn't worry about resume. Win out, and you're going to host a playoff game more than likely. You don't even have to mess with Indianapolis. Again, we're devaluing these conference championship games. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week.
Yep.
Well, it is going to be fascinating to watch. Another thing that is fascinating to watch is the story Ross has been all over bringing to you for the last few months, this deal in the Big Ten. I'm not going to call it a private equity deal because, again, that gets yelled at. It's an investment from University of California Investments, and it's a $2.4 billion infusion that Michigan and USC do not like the terms of the deal, and they are against it. There was some news on this on Tuesday or on Monday, Ross. What happened?
Yeah, you know, it's this been a long saga, obviously, to this point. UC Investments, the group that would partner with the Big Ten for this capital investment deal, came out and it basically said, you know, we're going to pause things until all the schools are on board, or if they ever get on board. And so I think things are paused and delayed right now. And this happened after our story about 10 days ago, 9 or 10 days ago, about how the Big Ten sort of signaled in messages to USC and Michigan that they were going to move forward, and they listed off, outlined repercussions if Michigan and USC were to vote against it and what would happen to them and whatever. And so I think that getting out publicly probably caused a lot of consternation, probably with the investment company as well. And so they kind of said, all right, like, we're just going to chill and pause things until they come on board, or if they ever come on board. Now, this Thursday, Michigan hosts a scheduled Board of Regents meeting, and Moelis, the banker, international banker, was supposed to do a presentation, their presentation, sort of after an examination of the Big Ten deal for the Michigan Board of Regents. I don't know if they still are going to do that now that things are paused, but I don't get the sense that Michigan or USC is any closer than what it was a month ago or 6 weeks ago in doing this deal, which is probably why UC Investments kind of came out publicly with the statement that they're just going to pause, because I think they put in their statement, it's best for everybody if the deal is with a unified Big Ten with all of them. I think the investment company probably doesn't want to be the one that breaks up the Big Ten, you know?
Yeah. I think that's kind of bad to be that person. Like,
yeah.
As homewreckers go,
yeah,
that's a pretty notorious yeah. homewrecker. It's
You
know, Jolene in the Dolly Parton song, maybe mm-hmm. the most famous homewrecker, but they'd be up there.
Yep. So I think they probably figured that after it got out publicly, they probably realized, you know.
It's great. Jolene reference, Strange Brew reference. Andy's on fire today. Good God. I'm going to have to turn over my hipster title.
It's a wide breadth of knowledge that does nothing for my daily life. So, gentlemen, it has been a pleasure breaking this all down with you. There will be more Coaching Carousel on Thursday, but we do have to talk about what happens on the field. So on Thursday, we're going to take you inside that game in Eugene, USC at Oregon. Biggest game of the weekend. Playoff implications. Cannot wait. We'll talk to you then.